Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. Wendy Wilson will join us here right after the market report. But first, hello, Al.
Hello, Melody.
How are you doing today?
I can't complain too much.
Oh.
I complain a little, but I'm not going to do it.
No one pays attention.
Well, not about anything personal. I may complain about some of the things the government is doing or the economists are doing. I may or may not.
All right. Well, we'll see. But gold today, I'm not complaining. It's down to 230. 230 for gold at 1225 off its low of 1217. We're looking right now at 1225. Silver's was up 0.09 at 1639. Platinum was down 6 at 996. Palladium was down a buck at $535. The USDX today down 0.24 at 95.37. Crude oil was up big today, 103. 103 for crude oil at 49.65. And the paper markets today are just rejoicing. The Dow is up big triple digits once again, 145 points, 17,851. The NASDAQ was up 33 at 48.95. The S&P was up 14 at 2,090. 10-year yield, 1.87. Europe was up a little bit, 112 on the euro. And I think European and some of your Asian markets were down on, I guess they were all up, Asian and European. So let's see if we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al. How's everybody?
Hello, Wendy.
Everything's great.
Yay. I thought we'd talk about empathy today. If you check the Bible says, you know, in the latter days, love will wax cold. And it got me thinking about, you know, why people seem to be so, disinterested in other people's misery these days. Can our situation of, anxiousness and depression be helped with better nutrition, regular exercise, and maybe some supplements rather than doing some of the drugs? Or, you know, is the territory of the pharmaceutical drugs helping us to manage that distress, or is it adding to it? So I thought we'd take a look at what could be causing an evident lack of empathy or maybe desensitization that people seem to be suffering from. I don't know if you've noticed that. Have you guys noticed that?
Absolutely. In the gold and silver market, absolutely. Yep.
Well, you know, 70 years ago, Melody, over-the-counter drug for pain was aspirin. But today we have other drugs. We have other drugs for anxiety and depression. And I truly believe that this is, contributing to the empathy issue. And actually, modern medicine is kind of backing that up. We're aware that there's been this explosion of drugs, both street drugs and prescription drugs. And these are very toxic and unsafe products, and they seem to be altering the minds of people, producing behavior that's representative of really of mental illness. So take, for example, amphetamines and cocaine have street names like Speed, Uppers, Bennies, Crack. These drugs, with frequent and consistent use, can bring on symptoms of paranoia, hallucinations, erratic behavior, high blood pressure, insomnia, loss of appetite, and fatigue. So if you overdose, of course, you could get a high fever, convulsions, and then death. Now, amphetamines were introduced to the public in 1937, and you may be surprised it was introduced in an over-the-counter treatment for nasal congestion. So since 1937, amphetamines has pretty much expanded. It's in a lot of drugs over the counter and in the marketplace. Obviously, this is just tip of the iceberg because we have barbiturates, stimulants, benzodiazepine, depressants, anti-anxiety drugs. I think it's just, you know, a whole conglomerate of this stuff that's really affecting people and how they think. Well, you know, what we have really on our hands is a marketplace, a drug marketplace that's affecting not only our mood and depression, but also judgment of human beings. There was this report in the 2010 Physicians Organization, and what this is a scientific research service that covers a wide range of topics, you know, in science and physics. And in the report on antidepressant drugs, they say they do more than just remove the symptoms of feeling depressed. They say the drugs stimulate the serotonin in the brain to unnatural levels and influence the moral judgment of a patient. Their whole report was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So the researchers at the University of Cambridge Behavioral and Clinical Neuroscience Institute found that antidepressants, quote, affect people's sense of right and wrong, end of quote. One of the lead researchers was Molly Crockett at the Institute, and she said that their research showed that the people that were most empathetic were more severely affected by these drugs. She says, interestingly, drugs like the serotonin uptake inhibitors, also called SRIs, those are the antidepressant drugs. She says that the effects were the strongest in people who were naturally high in empathy. So I think that's kind of crazy and scary at the same time. What do you guys think?
I think, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying, first off, but I think you're saying that people that are most prone to depression are also prone to maximum empathy to other people. Is that what you're saying?
Well, normally they are. If they have empathy and they're depressed, but once they take the SSRI drugs, if you have more empathy naturally, what you're going to have is a moral impairment on judgment. That's what they found in their study. So, people who are, I guess, tender-hearted, more sensitive, they're affected more negatively.
And they're more prone to depression is what you're telling us.
Yeah. Well, they did a dilemma test. This was the first time I've ever heard about this, but the Cambridge group did, they were suspicious about some of these prescription drugs, these antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs. So they wanted to measure the effect of moral judgment when these people were on these drugs. So they gave them dilemma tests, some with positive outcomes, like, you know, saving lives, and some with harmful outcomes, like killing an innocent person. And oddly enough, when these people were on the drugs and evaluated, their serotonin jumped up, and they judged the actions of saving lives as the opposite, as being morally wrong. And when they decreased the serotonin level to normal, those same participants were more aggressive against unfairness, and they seemed to come back in line with reality. It was really kind of interesting to read about that. But usually we've got these methylene deoxyamphetamines. You've heard about those. Ecstasy is the name of it. You've heard about ecstasy, right?
Yep.
Well, in the 80s, it was kind of distributed by a drug distributor in Los Angeles, California. It was kind of a side business. And they kind of put these drug compounds together, and they made this ecstasy product. And what it does is it affects the brain's serotonin, and a person feels this rush of euphoria. But it also enhances empathy. This particular drug works differently. But the drug developer felt that people didn't know what the word or the partygoers he was going to market it to. He didn't think they would know what empathy meant, Al, so he named it ecstasy instead. And in the 70s, psychiatrists actually experimenting with this same drug compound to see if they could make it into a prescription drug for post-traumatic stress disorder folks, but it had severe side effects like memory impairment, reduced permanent sensitivity to serotonin, and it had other cognitive problems which prohibited it from use. But the other thing it does is it elevates a person's trust level, and it can put somebody in a dangerous situation because they can't accurately read a situation that may be threatening. And they call this cognitive empathy disruption. It kind of almost wipes away the survival instinct of fear, if you will. And that's what that does. Well, let's get to the pain medicines. Here's another group of drugs. Ohio State University research showed that our common pain relievers, I get my tongue all wrapped around. I've seen acetaminophen products, you've seen them in Tylenol, those kind of mm-hmm. types of products for pain. Well, test subjects who took these types of drugs, Tylenol products, if you will, were exposed to information about the suffering of others. And what they experienced was less empathy while taking the drug. And the findings were published in this month's issue of Social Cognitive and Affective Neuroscience Journal, if you want to check it out. Another study also appeared in Psychological Science Journal that stated that the Tylenol products dull a person's ability to feel positive emotions, and it diminishes our emotional response behavior. So according to Health Canada, they got 23% of their population, that's 52 million people, are taking these type of Tylenol drugs. And according to Consumer Healthcare Products Association, Tylenol is found in over 600 different over-the-counter products, the acetaminophen ingredient. What do you think of that?
I don't know. I mean, you hear these stories. It's bad enough at the over-the-counter drugs. It's all getting into the groundwater. You know, it's hard to find a refuge where you can sit back and say, I can safely consume this food or even this water.
Yeah, I know. It's blanketing, isn't it? Everything. Well, here's a quote from Professor Baldwin. Let's see. He's a professor at Wexner Medical Institute. He's in charge of behavioral medicine research there at Ohio State University as well. And he says that they don't understand why the acetaminophen products are having these effects, but it's concerning. End of quote.
When we just say concerning.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how serious is this problem and what is the dimension of their concern, and are they really concerned, or is this happening? People actually want this result and they're saying, feed them some more Tylenol.
Well, maybe I can answer it this way. There was some research in 2004 and it appeared in the Social Cognitive Science Journal that stated that the region of the brain that houses pain receptors is also where we experience empathy for other people. So we feel the other person's pain. So it makes sense that when you shut off the pain, you significantly diminish the feelings of empathy.
Saying when you shut off your own pain.
Yeah.
All right, I can't feel, my back is no longer hurting me. And at the same time, I don't feel any empathy if your back is hurting you.
That's what they're saying. And likewise, mm-hmm. that trust and fear issue with the ecstasy drug, these also, these feelings are also in the same region of the brain. So if you, you know, mess with your trust factor or your fear factor, you know, you're gonna have them shut down. So they're real close together. It's like a fine line. So researchers are really now looking, get this, they're looking to see if there's any similar effects with other common pain relievers like ibuprofen. So they're looking into that one too. And I'm sure this all is probably buried somewhere in the, you know, research that the drug companies did on their own stuff. Who knows? But
The next question is, what proportion of the total pharmaceutical industry is based on Tylenol-like compounds? If we come up with evidence that says, oh my gosh, Tylenol is no good for us, or those the fundamental chemical in that time, if that's no good for us, what is the financial impact of that conclusion?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it just depends on how much pain you're in. Some people would say, you know, I if I'm in a lot of pain, I'll sacrifice empathy for a little while, you know. But the problem is, you know, when I started thinking about this and all these over-the-counter pain relievers and cold relief formulas and stuff that have Tylenol or acetaminophen in them, and it messes with our judgment. How many of these drugs have contributed to this, say, instances of domestic violence or any violent event? And what effect?
How many have contributed to the election of various politicians and presidents? I don't care. Vote for them. It doesn't mean anything to me. I've got Tylenol.
Well, yeah, maybe, you know, they're handing that out as you go in to vote, right?
Maybe they've got it on the keys. Maybe it's absorbed into your fingertips off the keyboard or whatever when you go in to vote.
Well, you know, I got to think it also, well, okay, so that's Tylenol, acetaminophen products. What if somebody's taking a prescription, antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and SSRI uptake inhibitor drug that messes with your empathy and is taking Tylenol, right? Or some other pain reliever, you know, what kind of impact does that overall have on a person's mood, behavior, moral judgment, empathy? When you mix drugs like that, you know, you could actually experience a shift away from your natural personality. How many times have we seen on the news somebody went and shot his whole family and the neighbor said, oh my God, I'm shocked. He was never like that. I'm just, you know, who is that person?
Well, you know, we hear those stories with Prozac back 20 years ago and whatever. A number of people went out and committed suicide or whatever. If you stop loving yourself, if you don't feel empathy for yourself, in a sense, I wonder if that makes you, predisposes you to say, hand me the gun. I think I'm going to finish this off. Had enough of this.
Yeah, I think so, because,
we live in strange and interesting times, Wendy. Why don't you give us some contact information where people can learn more if they want to contact you, or what can they do to maintain their empathy? I don't hear you, Wendy. I'm not sure what's happened here, but I am not hearing anyone other than myself.
100%. Yeah, I can't hear either.
Okay, well, Wendy's back now. I hear her back.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, we're having our Memorial Day special, 10% off free ground ship in the U.S. on orders of $65. People can call toll-free at 866-229-3663 or visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Give her a call. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier.
Just imagine what you can do with Thyme Herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of Thyme Herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for Thyme Tincture and Tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We're continuing the special, the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. That's a $5 face value on that 1/10 ounce and 90% silver, $28 face value. Quarters or dimes. $526. Give us a call at 800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Got an article from sovereignman.com. Congress wants to prohibit the Fed from bailing out bankrupt states. And he says, just days ago, in the midst of the Puerto Rican debt morass, 24 members of Congress introduced the No Bailouts for State, Territory, and Local Governments Act. Now, you got to emphasize up front that this hasn't been enacted. It's been introduced. It's a bill. It's been proposed. 24 members of Congress have co-authored this bill, apparently, and they said, we're for it. We can and the reason this is an interesting story, even though the bill has not yet been enacted and may never be enacted, it's evidence of a kind of growing sentiment within, and perhaps even growing desperation within the Congress. 24 of these people are saying, we can't help the states. We can't help the territories. We're going broke ourselves. That's the implication here. Now, that's not all the Congress, but it's some of the Congress. And if 24 supported this, actively supported it, there's a good chance that 100 more members in Congress would vote for it if it actually came to a vote. The article continues. It says, apparently Congress knows there's a massive wave of defaults coming at the city and state level. Detroit and Puerto Rico are just the tip of the iceberg. Many U.S. states have atrocious finances. Illinois and Maine, for example, have dangerously low levels of cash relative to the debts and obligations they have to pay. That's saying what they're saying with the dangerously low levels of cash. It's saying they're solvent. It's at least implying that these states, Illinois and Maine, are solvent, but barely so. That's the implication at best. But they go on and they say New Jersey and California are among several states that are technically insolvent, meaning they lack sufficient assets to make good on all the promises they've made, like pensions and bonds. But they're technically insolvent right now. That means they can be, in theory, if I'm technically insolvent, the way bankruptcy laws work, I can be placed in an involuntary bankruptcy if three of my creditors combine to say, hey, he's not paying his bills. All right? When we admit that the several states are technically insolvent, we're saying they are technically bankrupt right now. And we're going to watch and see what happens. The article goes on. It says the federal government is in the exact same boat. Uncle Sam has the worst finances of the bunch, $19 trillion in debt, $40-plus trillion in long-term pension liabilities, and decades' worth of budget deficits. But unlike state governments, the U.S. federal government has an ace in the hole, the Federal Reserve. It says, right now, the Fed is one of the largest holders of U.S. debt. Whenever the U.S. government goes into debt, the Fed essentially bails them out by printing money and buying treasury bonds. That's true. But when we say the U.S. federal government has an ace in the hole, the Federal Reserve, the presumption is that the Federal Reserve can and will continue to buy as many government bonds as the government issues. And I'm not sure that's true. I have a strong suspicion that the Federal Reserve's capacity, certainly their willingness to cooperate, is badly diminished. They don't want to buy any more government bonds. They don't want to get stuck with this stuff, and that's what's going to happen. They're ones. The reason the Fed is buying so much government debt, or at least they have been, is because private creditors said, forget it, we're not lending any more money to you. You can't pay the existing debt. Why would we lend you more? This happened back, maybe 3-4 years ago. They had an auction for U.S. government debt, and they had these auctions on a regular basis, several times a year. I don't know how many. But they were waiting for the audience to make bids for government bonds that were close to the face value of the bonds. And nobody was willing to do that. They were waiting for an opportunity to bid when the bonds were, who knows. They never got to the bottom of this. We could say, as a hypothesis, that they're ready to bid. They'd buy the government bonds if the bond price was reduced by 30%. You could buy a $100,000 bond for $70,000. All right? And then you stand to make some kind of a profit before you ultimately you can sell the bond. I don't know. You do whatever you do with it, but you can make profit. But they wanted to buy very low. The government stopped the auction. Just stopped it. Rather than continue and produce evidence of how little the free market valued the U.S. government's bonds. They didn't want to produce that evidence because if they did, the whole system would fall down. The Federal Reserve stepped in and they said, sure, we'll pay you $98,000 or $100,000 for a $100,000 bond. We have confidence that the government bonds are still worth their face value or very nearly that. And the Fed stepped in and they did that, but they bought something like $3.5 trillion worth of bonds that they had to know, and they paid basically face value for them, or nearly face value. And they had to know that they said, listen, you know, it's like buying a house for $250,000 that you know is only worth $125,000. You may have some ulterior motive for doing it, but it's the sort of thing that you don't want to make a habit of. It's going to make you broke. You can't overpay and overpay. That's what the Fed's been doing. And so my point is when they say, but unlike state governments, the U.S. federal government has an ace in the hole, the Federal Reserve, I'm not convinced that's true. Right? I think the Federal Reserve has essentially at least become reluctant and perhaps incapable of buying more government, significantly more government debt. The article continues. It says the states don't have the ability to conjure money out of thin air like the central bank. But even that, what's that tell you? When the Federal Reserve is conjuring money out of thin air and using it to and using it to purchase bonds, then the government can use the currency that they paid for the bonds to go pay for its employees, its pensions, whatever its expenses are. If you have to spend money out of thin air, that's evidence you're bankrupt. That's equivalent to me kiting a check, right? It's equivalent to me or you or Melody. We get into a situation, we're tight on funds, and we sign our name to a check for $1,000 when we know very well, I don't have $1,000. It's not in the bank account. But I'm going to write the check anyway, and I'll pay a fine on it bouncing, and I'll make it good. I'll make it good within the next, who knows, week or 10 days. When they have to spend the money out of thin air, that is equivalent to passing a check that is not backed by funds. It's an admission that they're bankrupt, and they do it all the time. The natural tendency for states that are insolvent and or bankrupt is to seek a bailout from the federal government. However, the U.S. government is too broke to bail anyone out, including itself. So this new bill was put on the table to prohibit any federal agency, including the Treasury Department, from bailing out any bankrupt city, state, or territory, including Puerto Rico. In other words, if the bill passes, the Fed would not be, they would not be allowed to print money. The Federal Reserve would not be allowed to print money to buy bonds issued by state or city governments or territorial governments. So apparently, we don't have any states, territories, or cities that are too big to fail. We have Wall Street financial institutions that are too big to fail, but not states or cities. This implies that a national bankruptcy, if there's going to be one, will probably start at the state and local level and then work its way up to the federal government. The federal government, will probably be the last entity to admit it's bankrupt, although it seems inevitable that they're going to have to make that admission sooner or later because it's the truth of the matter. And I don't see there's any way for them to get out of it. I mean, they can continue to pretend, they can use their MasterCard to pay off their Visa, to pay off their American Express, but the truth, the mathematical truth of the situation is going to emerge. And when it does, people are going to say, oh my gosh, the government is broke. Who would have thought that? And the truth is, there's been plenty of evidence to look at it, look at the situation for perhaps several decades, and realize the government's broke. This whole thing is a house of cards. It's a house of, you know, we talk about fiat currency. It's not real money. It's currency that the government has declared to function like real money, but it's not. In that regard, the government's fiat currency is a lot like a special effect in a Star Wars motion picture. You know, you go to Star Wars movie and you see the special effects and there's lightsabers and I can't remember the fighters, the X-Fighters or whatever they're called. And it's very stimulating. Some of the movies make the special effects make you jump and make your heartbeat beat faster. They make you sweat, all right? They give you chills, they scare you. But it's all a special effect. It's not real. We could say something very much like that about fiat currency. Oh, it'll make us jump. Oh my gosh, I'm broke. I don't have any money in the bank anymore. Well, you didn't have any money to begin with. All you had is some ones and zeros on a hard drive. You don't have any money in the bank. The fiat currency is a kind of special effect. It gets our blood pounding. It makes us jump. It makes us anxious. It makes us happy and proud. But it is a special effect that is very similar to the same thing we see in motion pictures. And you have to ask yourself, how long can a system that's based on special effects continue to survive? How long before we finally have to face the truth and say, oh my gosh, these green pieces of paper aren't really money. They're just currency that they can essentially spin out of thin air. Isn't that evidence that they're bankrupt? And if it is, how do you protect yourself? How do you avoid being caught in this vortex of bankruptcy that seems to be headed our way? And from my perspective, the answer is you get out of debt, you get as far away from debt as you possibly can, and you store your assets in some sort of a physical, tangible form that is not subject to being vaporized like a special effect on film. You know, we have the motion picture of Star Wars again, the Death Star surrounding the planet, coming into view of the planet such and such. I don't remember the planet. And they fire their monster cannon and they destroy, not the star, the planet. They destroy an entire planet. Well, it's all very impressive, but it's not real. How long can we continue to operate our government based on a fiat fictional currency? How long can we operate our economy? It's worked for, we've had pure fiat currency now since 1971. And it's worked, got to give them credit, close to 50 years. But it's still nothing but a special effect. And what happens when people realize it's only a movie? We don't really have any money in the bank account. Some of you people get this right now. You understand this. And as a result, you sit back and say, I'm going to get some gold. I'm going to get some real money while there are still people who are willing to sell their gold. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to trade my worthless pieces of green piece paper, which are not really money. They're just currency that's been spun out of thin air. I'm going to trade that for some gold that has been dug out of the ground and refined and smelted and coined, all right? And now I have a physical mechanism for storing my wealth that's been recognized for several thousand years. A lot of people are going to make that transition as they walk away from the special effect that we call fiat currency and begin to get realized, look, reality, truth, is going to assert itself. It's going to intrude, and a lot of people are going to scream. It's like being in the motion picture theater when something happens and the projector dies halfway into the movie. The audience is going to holler and scream and throw their Coke at the movie screen. But they were only involved in an illusion in the first place. And you got to wonder, you know, to what extent are you and I responsible for succumbing to the special effect we call fiat currency? Why did we get so involved in this stuff? We've been conditioned and tricked and deceived, but still we are also responsible for failure to perceive what is, to perceive reality. And those of us who have failed to make that perception, failed to try to make that perception, are going to be in the worst possible condition. They're going to be absolutely infuriated when somebody shuts down the projector on the Star Wars movie. But it's only a movie, only an illusion. If they had any sense, they'd deal with something more real. I mean, I love movies, and I like movies and the rest of it. I haven't been to one for a long time, but they're fascinating, they're attractive, but it's just like the fiat currency. You're going to have to make a decision if you can, if you understand what I'm saying, and get rid of the paper if at all possible and get tangible gold, silver, land, tools, guns, bullets, food, water, something tangible. Take a break. Some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Ms. Shedlock.
I just want to make a comment. Yeah, I do. I want to make a comment on what you were talking about. And, you know, the way I see this, I think the importance of this is it's a sign that you have Congress, 24 members that are at least putting this out. Mm-hmm. They're telling us this is a sign to tell folks. Personally, you know, people say, well, Melody, you're always so negative. It's like, you know, aren't you ever positive? I am positive about what we can do to protect ourselves. And I do believe this is why we have gold and silver. And what I also believe is until they fix the root of the problem, and that is the fiat currency, all the other proposals aren't going to work. They have to fix because that's where the problem is. That's where the problems have been created, is that fiat currency. And, you know, we all know the history of the Federal Reserve. We all know the confiscation. We all know the closing of the gold window. Well, most of us do. And, you know, perhaps we don't talk enough about those sometimes. But it all started with the fiat currency. It allowed government to create what they needed to create in order to grow bigger and bigger. It's not going to stop until it is forced to stop. And so, again, it might not happen tomorrow. It might not happen next week. I believe we're getting closer and closer. Mm-hmm. But I also do not underestimate their power and their ability to extend the situation. I'm personally in the camp that I believe things are going to pick up this summer. You're going to see things change just like we did last summer. And I think they'll try to hold things together through the election. But there's a lot of things that are happening between now and the election. We talk about England, you know, we talk about, you know, the various things that the Federal Reserve could or wouldn't do. And so anything could change these predictions. But I think once the election and once Donald Trump, which I believe he should be elected, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. Once he's elected, then I think they will let the economy begin to unwind. And I think 2017 is going to be, you know,
bad year.
It's going to be a bad year. Yeah. I still think we're going to see, you know, gold and silver steady out here. And I think in June, I think you're going to see prices begin to rise. And so what if we have knee-jerk reactions with a stronger dollar? It doesn't mean anything. It means to the degree of the of the system that is being manipulated, and the changes, these knee-jerk big moves in markets and currencies around the world shows you just how fragile the system truly is. So again, folks, you can't wait for something to happen, and you have to know what moves. What is moving our economies? What is moving the situations that we see? And I think this article was important to the degree that, this is a wake-up sign. There isn't any money out there. I think personally that they'll continue to help with the states as long as possible, but there will come a time when they can't, and they won't.
I think
the states will be on their own.
They may juggle things where they can help some states or help some cities. They may juggle things, but truth of the matter is they're basically broke. They can't afford to support their own obligations.
They'll juggle to
they don't
help,
want to take on any more.
They'll juggle to help the bigger cities and so forth. Mm. You know, we already saw where Sacramento, where their bankruptcy court, they didn't support. They supported the creditors, I believe. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal, meaning they're not going to protect you.
Well, that they're not going to write off the debt. That's what it means. It means that someone came in and they said, look, we can't pay the debt, and it needs to be restructured, and we'll cut the debt by 50%. How about that? And they might have said 70%. They might have said 30%. I don't know how much they're going to cut the debt. But they said, we need an agreement that we don't have to pay our bills. And the court said, no, you do. You do have to pay your bills, and the government's in a position where it can't. The only way it can presume or appear to pay its bills is by printing more money, more currency, and using it to pay. I just got a new bale of fresh right off the press. I just love the smell of those freshly printed dollar bills. And I'm going to give you a couple bales because I really like you. And here, take another bale. Have one on me. This is a tip for you. It's only thing they can do with that is inflate the currency. They'll make the currency worth less. If they're going to go to inflation, they destroy the currency. If they're going to go to deflation, they destroy the debtors. They're caught. We're in a situation where there will not be an easy or painless escape from the problems that are coming our way. But there's going to be trouble, although no one really knows when it's going to happen. But when you talk about, you think they'll hold this thing together until Trump takes office, and that may be true, or at least whoever next takes office.
Well,
it's equally possible from my perspective that if they can pull the plug, why not dump it on Obama? Because everybody despises the guy anyway. We can always blame Obama for the next depression and give the next president something like a clean slate. And you can say it's not his fault. It was Obama, right? The evil Obama. He's the one to blame. And if they pull the plug before Obama's out of office or before the next president takes office, that'd be in January of next year.
Well, we have seen the cracks. You know, it started last year, and you will continue to see the cracks, and you might have something come from left field. But the big stuff will come next year, just like it was all election years. They try to keep things, you know, semi-calm.
Well, I know.
Just so their politicians can get elected, whoever they want, or you know, at least moved into
the incumbents.
Positions.
Get the incumbents.
That's just how election years work. You know, that doesn't mean we're not going to see some sort of unwinding, some sort of cracks and so forth. And, they'll blame Bush.
See, there's another thing about this, too. Oh, yeah. they may be blame Bush Sr. It's hard to say how far you can go back to Nixon. Took us finally off the gold standard, but you could go back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who pulled the gold out of domestic circulation in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember, I guess it was maybe Nixon who took silver, finally stopped redeeming silver in 1968. That was the end of redeeming silver certificates with silver dollars. I don't know if that was under the Nixon administration or not. It may have been. It might have been. But there's no telling how far back you can go with a blame. But the way people look at politics is they blame whatever is. Hey, if it happened now,
today,
you're in office now, you're responsible. So if we have this problem, and it erupts before Obama gets out of office. It's not only evidence that Obama is the one who's, we can blame Obama. We could also blame the current Congress. But they have a new Congress every 2 years, right? If this problem, and you know, if it was allowed to manifest before the end of this year, well, then the current, it would be bad for incumbents. I get that. It'd be good for Trump, be bad for incumbents. But at least whoever gets elected next year, they said, well, those were the idiots. So the guys who were here before we got here, they were the ones responsible. They were the idiots. And the truth is, you know, it's like Diogenes looking for an honest man. That's an interesting search. But looking for a smart one is also hard. You know, it's a difficult, that's also another, you need a brand new lantern for that one. Who do you blame? That's kind of what it comes down to. Who is going to take the blame? I think Obama's, even if the problem hit the fan next year, 2017, after Trump has taken office, he's still going to be able to blame Obama, and everybody's going to say, yeah, of course, that's right. And it might not be right, but everyone will be, pretty much the majority will be predisposed to blame Obama. So when is it going to happen? Before the end of this year, sometime next year? I don't know. Nobody knows. But it certainly looks as if we're getting closer all the time, and we've even got 24 congressmen that say, look, we can't help you people. We've only got lifeboats enough for us. We're going to make sure we preserve the Congressional Pension Fund, because you got to have that, you know. I mean, your congressmen and your senators, they have done so much for so many, it's only fair that they get an enormous pension. Even if they get run out of office, we're still going to give them a big, fat pension where they can live in the style to which they've become accustomed for the rest of their lives. We're going to protect that. The rest of it, we don't know. It'll be optional.
Before we move on, I just want to make one comment, then we can move on. Is it really doesn't matter when it happens. We're in the process right now. It does happen every day. Your purchasing power decreases every day. And this is something that you have to understand. It's happening. The big event hasn't happened yet, but it's happening. It's been happening. And so don't focus on all these predictions on when it's going to happen. Just understand you do what you need to do today.
Well, that's the idea. That's why it does matter when
it's the best of
we don't know when it's going to happen.
We don't know when it's going to happen.
But the point is, it hasn't happened yet, and until it happens, mm-hmm. you have an opportunity to protect yourselves, ladies and gentlemen.
You
right?
won't
it's
be early. It's better to be yeah. early. It's better to be yeah. early than late.
Yeah. If you're a day late, you might as well be a decade late.
Yes.
Sorry. Day early, good. Day late, ooh, too bad. You're going to be sorry.
Now, What's next?
Oh, we've got an article here from Ms. Shedlock. IMF demands unconditional debt relief for Greece. And he says, most political and financial demands are nothing but bluffs and lies. For example, on Tuesday, the IMF demanded Europe to give Greece unconditional debt relief. Now, what he means by that is the IMF wants Europe to just write off the Greek debt, of which at least half of the original Greek debt has already been restructured and written off. And now the IMF says, you got to write off all the rest of it. And Ms. Shedlock comes back and he says, or what? Greece's European creditors must give the nation unconditional debt relief for the International Monetary Fund to provide new financing. According to the IMF, laying out its position as euro area finance ministers met in Brussels to discuss the bailout. Now, Ms. Shedlock is saying that the IMF is essentially behaving in a way that's irrational, arrogant. They're making threats to say, you got to write off all the debt before we won't lend Greece any more money. And Ms. Shedlock seems to see this as an exercise in IMF ego and arrogance, but I think he may be missing the point of the story. This isn't really about the IMF making irrational demands. It's about the IMF wanting to be repaid for whatever funds it lends to Greece. In other words, the IMF could lend more currency to Greece to help stimulate the Greece economy. But the IMF would like to be repaid for whatever currency it lends Greece. However, the IMF knows that if Greece can't pay its existing debts, it therefore won't be able to repay any new debts due to the IMF, which implies that the IMF can't expect to be repaid whatever new currency it lends to Greece unless either, one, Greece repays all of its existing debts and thereby becomes debt-free and a good candidate for credit, or two, Greece's current creditors agree to forgive the existing debt so Greece can become debt-free and a good candidate for credit and therefore be able to borrow more money from the IRS and repay it. I didn't say IMF, not IRS. They want to borrow more money from the IRS. Clearly, Greece can't and won't repay its existing debt. So option number one is out. So the only way to clear Greece's books and turn them into credit-worthy borrowers is to get the... Greece can't pay its existing debts. They can't borrow any more until they get to they've cleared the books. So the IMF is simply saying, look, you guys, you other creditors, you just got you got to take a loss here. Not just 50%, which you've already taken, you got to take 100% loss. And then we can lend more money to Greece. Huh? And then we can even expect to be repaid. Well, that's the way I'm inclined to view this. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the IMF is essentially saying that they can't just spend this money out of thin air and give it to Greece. That's the way I'm reading this. They are saying that if Greece wants more money from us, we got to get rid of Greece's existing debt so Greece at least has a chance to repay whatever additional funds we lend them. How it's going to work out, I have no idea. This thing, it's just more evidence of the system that has run out of credit, run out of cash, run out of assets. How are they going to hold it together? I don't think they can, and we'll see the same thing in this country before it's all over. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Melody and I will see you at that point. Hope you'll tune in. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, money.